It's pretty hard to be living in Pittsburgh and not know who Judy Robinson is, because she's been involved in so much of the literary scene here in Pittsburgh for a lot of years. And really, that project that Shankar and I, well, Shankar began and that we all worked together on, we couldn't have done it without Judy. She was just amazing, just amazing. Judy Robinson is an editor, teacher, fiction writer, and poet. She's a graduate of the University of Pittsburgh, and her work's been published in numerous magazines, anthologies, newspapers. She's the editor of Living Inland, the author of The Beautiful Wife and Other Stories, poetry editor of Signatures, published out of Carnegie Mellon University. She's, and of course, was the editor, the lead editor of Only the Sea Keeps, and the co-editor with Michael Worcester of Along These Rivers, Poetry and Photography from Pittsburgh, a really amazing collection. Her chapbook, Dinner Date, was published by Finishing Line Press in July of 2009. And you have some copies here? Maybe? No? Okay, you don't have some copies here. Okay, please welcome Judy Robinson.
Thank you, Joan, and thank you, Jimmy, and thank you, Hemingways. This is so wonderful. I was saying to Jay Carson, that who's going to read next week, and we have to be here. It's so wonderful to be part of this community of poets. It really, truly is. Hi, Hazel. Hi. Thank you all for coming. It's wonderful to see you all. I miss Michael. He went to Philadelphia on us. I want to add to my bio, because Bob Eshbaugh is here, I had the pleasure last year of editing the work of Margaret Menneman, wonderful Pittsburgh poet who we all adored and miss very much. Her book, Wayfarer, which I edited, was published by Main Street Rag, and we are working on the sequel. We're working on a second volume of Margaret Menneman poems, so I want to mention that now. Bob is here, and I thank you for coming. Okay, we'll read a few poems. We start with something funny, okay? It's hard to follow Shankar Roy also, but I thank him for that. I asked that I not go first. Poets are allowed to be a little bit eccentric, right? I don't like going first. This is called The 50s, or When Ike Played Golf on the Newsreels. In the middle of the 20th century, before God decided to leave, adults wore hats, smoked cigarettes, placed teeth white as shirt buttons in cups at night, and didn't bother to lock doors. God could not have faulted them this foolishness, could he? This is called, these are short poems, and they're newer poems. This is called At Lanigan's. The body lies neatly clothed, the face powdered as well as possible, being so dead now. Clearly, the soul has fled with its grace and kindness. Now mourning is somewhere else too, not here with this strange shell, this imposter. This is called Numbness. Numbness is a visitor who asks nothing, but sits as though waiting. She never wears color, makes no particular statement. She arrived at the end of a very long siege, a war that ended with no resolution. I respect her veneer of solidness, her calm eyelids, her face made like stone. I wish she would leave. This is a sequel to Numbness. It's called Leopardi and Me. I have had a visitor, an impervious spirit with a face made like stone. Her name is Numbness. She sits and stares with hard, blind eyes. I have wished she would leave. Giacomo Leopardi calls her Noia. He knows her precisely as I do, but does not waste time making wishes. He fights. He knows where she came from. She rode in on a backwash, pale, dirty water, in the wake of the ship that carried off the garden nymphs, the songbirds, all the names I knew. She preys upon me, chilling, hardening, prevailing. He has his weapons, his fierce heart. Unlike me, he will not let her win. This is called Oh, the Nice Things. Her cures included nice things, a nice bath, a nice cup of lemon tea, a nice story, as if coziness was the antidote to the lineup of heart stings that revealed who you really were. Fat, unfriended, unkissed, middle school zero, and oh yes, desperado, aching to need to wear a bra. One of the themes of my work is the Holocaust, and my impressions of the Holocaust as an American Jew. I begin this, I've read a lot of these, but these are a few that I have not read too often. This is called I Apologize, and it relates to the Holocaust, as you will hear. Okay. I apologize to my precious elders, the valuable ones, those thick-fleshed, indestructible Jews I have known, those who endured, those who had the clenched tooth grit to flee before the ovens were lit, those Bergs and Steins and Skis, those tailors, artists, bakers, peddlers, scholars, music makers who did not become the incinerated trash of Europe. My own people, once stalwart as the stars, must now weep as we, their stunning progeny, disappear like shadows into the cracked cement of sweet America, our brainless heads sucked under the white foam, merging, whistling, forgetting, drowning, dancing, no lessons learned, refusing to keep anything. That's okay, no applause. I did a series of what I call Holocaust sonnets. So you all know what a sonnet is, a 14-line poem with a rhyme scheme. Jim doesn't know. He knows. Okay, so this is sonnet number one. It's called Wakeful. Forgive her. She is afraid to be near the spot of brain that bled so, scared to watch the scab let go, open up, pour forth, to see the pool a bloody flood again, said she. Bear up, she heard the doctor say. But half blunderer, she would hide away, half coward, reluctant to know the feel of risky edges. She fears the overhopped of thieves, the crimson tapestry he weaves, the night terror that he dredges. Deep sleep might offer sweet release, but what he comes and steals is peace. This is a Holocaust poem. It's been published lots of places, but it's one of my favorites. It's called Forgive Her. Ignace doesn't count days in the cave. That would be foolish. He and Morris and Milton never see daylight anyway. They forage only at night, only in dark. But he knows by the season that a long time has passed. The air and the rain have warmed lately. It feels like Pesach, perhaps late April or early May. Today, Morris has gathered their sour winter bedding, leaves and bark, into ragged piles to scatter outside. Ignace feels certain the year is 1944. If that is right, he would be 31. Please, God, please, please, Milton whispered over and over, early on, before he stopped speaking. Morris, however, still prays his cheerful daily Shema and works and cleans the cave. Ignace wonders at them both. Who is right? Which brother knows best? Animals are part of the world, too, Bats, birds, spiders, snakes, citizens, cohorts, brothers we must unfortunately eat. What is the difference? No difference. But Ignace wonders, where is our mother tonight? She of tender flesh and kisses. Eaten now, too? Fed to the flames of what, exactly? Hard to say. Hard. Hard. Hard to remember the reason. But her hair was long and dark and smelled of lavender. The cave is cold, but it is home. Ignace, Milton, and Morris are cave dwellers, Jew birds who suck on the bones of cohorts and defecate blood. Milton is mute. Morris weeps and sways. Only Ignace wonders, do my brothers still dream? I do. I see sparks and spots like stars I believe are friends in the sky, and grass that grows high on fields I knew, remember well. But now I'm not asleep. No sparks or grass to help me now. Only sleep can. Why can't we sleep with our mother tonight? Hear her mention what she thinks we need to know. There is a shape to things, she said, an order. Boys and girls, an alphabet, oceans, land, and a heaven. She suckled us, entwined us sweetly in her arms. So we must bite down and do our utmost to forgive her. My other theme lately is grandmother poems, because I became a grandmother. And I think about my own grandmothers having the experience of being a grandmother. This one's called Songs. It's in three parts. One, for Catherine. Joy came marching, an apple and American flag in grand celebration. Our tunes outsang the radio all night. I remember softness, arms and breasts around me in a bed, then nothing. A snapshot of a woman who looks like me now, staring into the inexplicable distance with tilted eyes, thin, shapely lips, a square jaw. For Dora, number two. So much more music than speech, songs from a girlhood, a grand old czar, meet me in St. Louis, Louis, meet me at the fair. We sat and rocked in a swing on a porch. She held my pretty little hand in her worn down fingers. Wishes for a future whispered in Yiddish, a melody sung as part of a prayer. Afternoons hummed with raisins and almonds and pictures of relatives who were disappearing. And there was tea in the cupboard, lemon pie in the fridge. Three. Since then, over seasons of grace and dirges of mourning, riding the raging horse of time, I hold on to these tiny gleaming nugget notes, embedding them in bone so deep, they are mine, they are me. I did a poem for my little grandson. It's called Dream Lunch for Grant. It was in the Post-Gazette last summer. Dream Lunch. I'd like to write a poem when I'm hungry, stomach firing up the imagination with aromas of steaming pans of glowing onions, frying, buttery, turning crisp, or purple onions sliced over tender summer greens, arugula or bib, chunks of blue-veined cheese with oil that soaked the Tuscan sun, and Morton's kosher salt. And yes, I'd like some hearty, heavy bread, brown and crusty, embedded with sesame seeds and lots of crunchy nuts, walnuts, pine, and such. Let me add some ripe tomato from the garden, tended since spring by the dearest little soul I know who would like some peanut butter and jelly. Okay. Okay. This is a little more serious. Let's see, how are we doing on time? Okay, a couple more. When wanting what is ferocious inside to go away, walk on hot sand. You know you're somewhere. Your feet burn so badly that uncertainty has no purchase. When you are cut or cut yourself, the focus shifts from inside and the pain moves out with it. The dog watching these operations understands. He is smart enough. and he wears the mark of a perfect black heart. Okay. How about a love poem? A love poem. This is called Vineyard. The Atlantic is blue-gray here and clean. The light as Hopper saw it, cool, elegant, a contradiction in its intensity. I think of myself as like this light. I was my best here, in this windswept place. I was with the sun gleaming on your skin. I knew the shape of your hands as the sun did, the curve of your body, the waves against the ocean, flesh fragrant, berry-like, warmth dissolving coolness, anguished edges, every shadow. And this is an unloved poem. It's called Airborne. So he up and left you, a stunning shock, like expecting rest in an innocent place, a grassy mound touching pretty stones that at once fly up and smack your face hard, enemy hard, completely unanticipated. Of course he has gone crazy, big bald head dripping, every screw loosened into a shameful madness that tells him the pilot is lying, stalling, trying to whitewash, and you who refuse to see are complicit and part of the poison. Travel brings it on, the terrible screech and rush of bodies and machines hurling, place him on a spot in the universe of experience he can neither grip nor sustain. He both caves in and lurches up in the same moment, a monster in spattered trousers running from you, his great, great love. Okay. Last but not least, I have two little, I wrote something called a drabble. A drabble is a little piece of narration or a prose poem, which is an interesting little line to cross between prose and poetry. A drabble has to be exactly 100 words long. And this won a national award, so I thought, okay, I'll read it. It's called A Catholic Funeral. Though young when she died, Patricia had written with an old woman's wisdom, words and ideas multi-layered for the hungry, like flaky pastry, yielding more fullness with each bite. A certain beauty, too, deep, subtle, the kind it took eyes fired by spirit to see. The lucky saw what she allowed, the intimate parts, body locations that suffered, taut soul that wrestled with frenzy and raw death premonition. My quarrel is not that she's gone, but gone without a laurel crown or even historical context. No, all the praise that day was for Messiah, when I yearned to hear her voice, to know her maiden name. All right, last but not least, this is another little prose poem that I just wrote, and thinking of Hemingway's as kind of an experimental place, I thought I'd try it out on you. It's called What is Deserved, or maybe Comeuppance. Okay. A couple she knew slightly, the Coopers, jumped out at Laura on Sunday during an intermission of a performance by the Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. A matinee, a Beethoven concerto to be followed by Brahms' Fourth. Lovely, lovely so far, and maybe even transporting. But Laura found the sudden intrusion of the Coopers erasing her pleasure. They seemed to reek of dry, dirty old age, their combined breathing sucking up the air around them, their grinning faces raised above their metal walkers, mocking anything resembling the possibility of joy. Why were these wretches here, grabbing for her attention? Still here, she thought, still alive. And this is Harold, Mrs. Cooper's shrill voice rang out over the sounds of the milling crowd. Our son, you must meet him. Laura Mosley did her best, looking evenly at Harold Cooper. His face was covered with hair, a wild brown profusion of it, his features nearly blotted out by it. He looked like a lunatic. He said nothing. His eyes were visible and wild. He twisted his head like a startled animal. So they are real survivors. I'll give them that, these two old horrors, she thought. The Coopers, good Lord. The three of them stood waiting. Nice to meet you, she said. Harold Cooper's mouth twisted into the kind of grin he knew he was entitled to, and then he shrieked. What the hell are you so mad about? He said. Thank you.